Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again with our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. As always, a pleasure speaking with, emailing, talking with you guys. It's, again, a really blessed opportunity to be able to do this on a weekly basis and try and give as much practical and clinical information as I possibly can. All right, today's topic, one that is frequently encountered in neuropsychology and psychopharmacology, is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. One distinction that I want to make very clear is there is no such thing as ADD. It is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, predominantly inattentive type, predominantly hyperactive type, or combined presentation, where you have both inattention and hyperactivity. That is generally the most severe form of ADHD. Now, a common referral question is, or a statement made by a patient, I can't concentrate. All right, well, there's an over-reliance, from my perspective, on symptom rating scales. Do I use symptom rating scales? Yeah, absolutely, to kind of get more of a distinction of what is the patient supposedly experiencing, what symptoms are they endorsing. But from a diagnostic perspective, I think the only valid, reliable, and judicious approach to delineating a diagnosis of ADHD is to actually test the attentional systems. And we break attention down into simple attention, complex attention, and sustained attention. The more problematic type of ADHD is not from a severity of like behavioral dysregulation, where you have, you know, if you think about back in school, the most annoying kid who couldn't sit still, squirming, fidgeting. Those kids get the attention of teachers, of nurses, of pediatricians early on. And yeah, maybe there's a higher likelihood they have ADHD, but it's the individuals with the inattentive type that I find to really suffer and struggle the most. So the reason for that is there's no overt manifestation. So the terminology that we use is something called hyperconnectivity, excessive motor activity, that, you know, fidgeting in the seat, squirming, unable to sit still, restlessness, psychomotor agitation, that you'll see in the hyperactive type and the combined type. It's the individuals with the inattentive type. So if we take a look at like adolescents, they're often overlooked and labeled unfairly as unmotivated, not participatory, daydreamers. That's a common one. And ADHD, and we're also going to talk about processing speed disorders, or the issue is, because of no overt physiological manifestation, these kids get overlooked all the time, even adults, because there's an inability from these are neurodevelopmental disorders, which means they are there from birth. So it doesn't mean you can't diagnose somebody at middle age with ADHD. No, not at all. But until the demands of the situation bump up against the ability level, you may never see the attentional dysregulation. So if the attentional systems are never challenged, you're generally not going to see a person complain or have issues. So I see it a lot from the transition from elementary to middle school to high school into college. Now, I mentioned this, I think, in the behavioral modification program, in Russell Barkley's model, ADHD is the precursor to antisocial personality disorder. So in his model, ADHD leads to oppositional-defiant disorder, which then leads to conduct disorder, which then leads to antisocial personality disorder. Now, this tends to be found more in the individuals with the hyperactive type and the combined presentation, because as children develop and the peer groups start to crystallize, these kids are perceived as being annoying. And they're sent to the principal's office. They're getting in trouble at home. They're climbing on the furniture. They're annoying, but not annoying in a sense of they're deliberately trying to be bad. But it can easily manifest into that because, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. If I'm constantly getting into trouble for the way I'm acting and I have a neurological condition that I, one, don't know that I have, and two, that I can't control, and three, I have nothing to help mediate it, you know, if you think I'm a bad kid, I guess that's what I am. I am a bad kid. And who do these kids hang around with? They hang around with the other kids that are ostracized. And then it can snowball very quickly out of there into that. Medication for ADHD, everybody thinks there's a magic pill. Everybody wants Adderall. They want Concerta. They want Vyvanse. They want Focalin. They want, you know, there's not that many ADHD meds, but it's, am I an advocate of psychotropic medications with ADHD? Yes, absolutely. However, a stimulant medication will help anybody concentrate, but it does not teach anyone the skills. It doesn't teach how to organize, to plan, to sequence, to you know, the medication doesn't give you the skills. Yes, it'll help you concentrate, and here's the irony. It doesn't dictate what you concentrate on. So just as you may be able to focus on tasks that need to be accomplished, whether that's academically or occupationally, you could also hone in and focus with a lot of intensity on things that you don't want to focus on, painful memories, negative emotions. So do the medications work? Yes, absolutely. But again, they don't teach the skills. And that's why I recommend a lot of patients to work with executive function coaches. ADHD falls under one, the broad category of neurodevelopmental disorders, but you know, kind of a subcategory from that are the executive function disorders. So I'll come back to ADHD. One more thing with psychotropic medications. And again, you've heard me say this multiple times, therapy and meds without testing is like surgery without an X-ray. Rarely in my experience from doing thousands of neuropsych evals is it ever just ADHD. Rarely. Childhood, adolescent, adult. Is it ever, ever just ADHD? This is where it becomes crucial to get a neuropsych eval, not just where you're assessing the attentional systems and all the different domains of neurocognitive functioning, but also psychiatric diagnostic clarification. Somebody going on a stimulant medication with an undiagnosed mood disorder, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, places that individual at an elevated risk of an exacerbation of depressive symptoms, suicidal ideations. And that's why you need to get testing. So, you know, you have these different rating scales, and yeah, they're helpful. One is the Connors, and people diagnose off the Connors. I would never, ever, ever base a diagnosis of ADHD off a rating scale, like I said. You test the attentional systems. There's something called a halo effect. There's an overestimation and a high degree of false positives when you rely solely on the rating scale. Do the actual testing to delineate what it is. Now, as I mentioned, processing speed disorders. This goes under the category of other specified neurodevelopmental disorders, and kind of put, you know, what that might be. So processing speed is input, mental manipulation output. It has nothing to do and is not synonymous with being slow. As I've said before, neuropsych is independent of IQ. I will do IQ testing if it's relevant, but processing speed tends to manifest, or the deficits tend to manifest when information is presented quickly. Information is increasingly more abstract, nebulous, and or of an emotional quality. There are increased distractors in the environment. There's more noise. There's more things going on. Or when an individual is required to generate a quick response. In these situations, individuals with processing speed deficits or impairments have a proclivity to become increasingly overwhelmed and to and experience a proliferation in affective symptoms of anxiety, depression, irritability. Again, no overt manifestation. So somebody with a processing speed disorder, it could be visual processing, it can be auditory processing. So if you think about a child, and I have a tendency, I've been working on this with the podcast, but I have a tendency to talk very fast. If you slow the rate of information down for a student, they have a higher tendency to retain what's being asked. So one of the recommendations I will put in, an academic recommendation, is that a student is given their notes ahead of time. So this way, they don't have to sit and pay attention to what the teacher is saying, write down what the teacher is writing on the board, or tells them to write down, because at the end of the day, whatever is written down may be accurate, but because it's like they're hearing every third word. So if you imagine this, we're watching a movie, and we keep getting up every 5-6 minutes and come back and sit down. At the end of it, at the end of the movie, we kind of get the gist of what the movie was about. The sequel comes out, we're going to fall behind pretty fast because of all those gaps in information of, you know, important conversations or transitions and plots, stuff like that. So there's a principle. I did a lot of research in terms of neuropsych recommendations. You can be more creative, more fun sometimes. I like the application. Again, I think I'm giving out a lot of free publicity here with Peloton and other things like that. But, you know, it works. Lumosity.com. There's a principle called neuroplasticity. This is the brain's ability to grow new neuronal connections. And this was something that we've only developed or found out in the last several years, because it was previously thought that we're born with a finite amount of neurons, and the ones we use get enhanced, and the ones we don't use are eliminated by a process called phagocytosis. Not necessarily true. So by exercising the brain, and I to explain, I like to use a lot of metaphors with patients. It's like going to the mental gym. So somebody says, okay, I want to lose 20 pounds. All right, reasonable goal. How often do you work out? Well, I go to the gym 5 minutes every Monday. Okay, that's a good goal, but you're not going to lose 20 pounds by the amount of effort that you're putting in. 30 to 45 minutes a day. And why I like Lumosity is because of the constant changing of the, I guess I would call it like neurocognitive exercises. Think of it as almost like neurocognitive games, and they're based a lot of variations of neuropsychological tests. But to get the benefit, 30 to 45 minutes a day, you're actually strengthening, you're providing oxygenation, increasing blood flow, strengthening the neuronal connections. And this is the stuff that the stimulant medications can't do. And this works just as well for ADHD. So the research, I think I mentioned this in a different episode, but the research has shown that if you play a certain game over and over again, yes, you're enhancing cognitive functioning, but you will only become better at that particular game. When you vary games and you're constantly having to change back and forth and use different skill sets, that's creating the neuroplasticity because the brain is communicating with different centers back and forth because the skill sets are changing, which means the different regions of the brain are being activated, deactivated, on and off. And it's like just like working out mentally. And I could tell you from experience, people that I reevaluate on an annual basis or a regular basis that actually do this stuff, their scores improve. So timed games are what are really important when you come to processing speed. So I like doing like anagrams and crossword puzzles. I'm not trying to enhance my processing speed, and those aren't going to enhance my processing speed. I've just become better at the game. But the time games, you kind of see the clock ticking down. You know you have to complete a certain task in a certain amount of time. That is going to require extra cognitive effort in increasing, again, the oxygenation and blood flow and eventually enhancing neuroplasticity. So, again, these kids with processing speed disorders are also labeled as lazy, unmotivated, not trying. And the amount of effort they're putting in to their assignments is very different from the output they're receiving from their educators, whether, if we just take grades, for example. So they're spending an excessive amount of time trying to, not only learn the material, but to retain the material, to do mental manipulation of the material. Now, can you have ADHD by itself? Yes. Can you have a processing speed disorder by itself? Yes. Can you have both coexisting together? Absolutely. And again, the only way to know is formal neuropsychological testing. Processing speed, really, that's one where I see kids really, really struggle. And it's hard getting them, in the United States, we have like what are called like IEPs, like individual education programs, or a 504 program. I always push for somebody to be on an IEP. Especially if you have a kid who's depressed and anxious. So an IEP is the school is responsible for making sure that the academic accommodations are enacted. A 504 plan is kind of the same recommendations, but it's incumbent upon the student to advocate for themselves. And let me tell you, a kid who's depressed has anxiety or social anxiety, they're not advocating for themselves. And they go under the radar, and the longer these things are brewing, the more likely they are to develop a formal diagnosis of a psychiatric condition. Because again, ADHD, processing speed disorders, you'll see them in adults, you'll see them in children, you'll see them in adolescents, but you're going to see them. Or you're not performing well at work, you're not performing well academically, when the demands of the situation bump up against the ability level. So if you lay on a beach all day and you have nothing to do, you're probably never going to want to be on a stimulant or going to want to, do a cognitive stimulation program because there are no demands placed on you. But if you're in an academic environment, independent of grade level, or in a position that requires, cognitive abilities, especially if there are time frames and deadlines, yeah, you're going to see the manifestation of it. But please eliminate the misconception that stimulant medication is the be-all, end-all. There's one FDA-approved non-stimulant medication that's called Strattera or atomoxetine. It's actually an antidepressant. It works, but again, we're a fast-paced culture. Want it now, and it's a part of a treatment process, and it's a component, and it does help. Yes, the medications do work, but please don't be remiss in, you know, especially if you're a parent or you're dealing with a child or adolescent or young adult who is struggling academically, the executive function piece where you're actually learning the skills that are really are not developed and are not there. And being skill deficient is not necessarily a bad thing, because you kind of have, if you go back to what John Locke said, the tabula rasa, you kind of have a blank slate. And you start from scratch, and there's a lot of different interventions in the digital world that we work in with smartphones and iPads. There's a lot of different things that good executive function coaches can do in helping not only kids and adolescents, but also adults learn how to navigate if they have truly have an accurate diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, combined, hyperactive, or inattentive, and also for processing speed disorders. So, yes, medications are a part, but they are not the be-all, end-all. There's a great Netflix program, I think it's on Netflix, called Adderall Nation. I would encourage you guys, you can see all the underground texting and snorting and stuff like that. And a lot of times when I do feedback sessions with patients, I tell them you don't have ADHD. They're generally not happy. But that's the importance of doing actual diagnostics versus relying solely on an independent rating scale. And I'm not saying that the rating scales are not asking the right questions, because they do follow the diagnostic criteria, but to base a diagnosis on either an individual's report or a primary care's report or a teacher's report, I think is poor from a diagnostic standpoint, and from my perspective, not reliable. So these are valid diagnoses, and I was, a lot of people, when I talk about, when I give them a diagnosis that they have it of a processing speed disorder, they're like, what is that? And I really try to make it clear that this is just how your brain works. You are not slow. And again, testing is the only way to pick this stuff up, especially processing speed. You know, if you have concerns about yourself, you have concerns about your kids, your loved ones, get them tested. And again, testing the attentional system, testing the processing speed systems is the only way to do it. And again, the Nintendo Wii, that's another great intervention for not only ADHD, but also processing speed. Because you're using so many different component parts and so many different neurological and neurocognitive functions. I remember back in Chicago, they would do this in rehab hospitals. It was called Wehabilitation, which I thought was kind of cool. Started with a lot of times with like brain injured patients or patients with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or Huntington's. The game Simon. Remember the little circle? I think there's even keychain ones, you know, hit red, blue, green, red, blue, green, yellow. Those are great for enhancing processing speed. But like with anything, to get the true benefit and any kind of actual efficacy out of it, it has to become part of a lifestyle. It has to become part of your daily routine in order to get the benefit. For ADHD, there's also a lot of, sometimes a lot of parents and even adults don't want to go down the traditional psychopharmacological route. There's a great book that my wife uses quite a bit, even though she, you know, focuses primarily on, you know, true, you know, pharmacokinetics and psychopharmacology. A book by someone she trained with at Massachusetts General Hospital in her program. It's called Holistic Health for Children and Adolescents. I think it's got a blue cover. You can get on Amazon for $15. And these are all non-pharmacological interventions for treatment of a variety of disorders. So I would definitely encourage you guys to explore that. For example, rosemary is great in working with ADHD. The old scholars, before they would take exams, they would wrap their necks in rosemary. And sometimes, depending if I have a very severe ADHD child, usually a child or adolescent, in the office, I'll put on the diffuser with rosemary. And it's amazing the calming effect it actually has. So people, you know, do have some hesitancy about being on, you know, starting themselves or their children medication. I completely respect that. I'm just giving you a resource to kind of check out and explore that are, you know, non-pharmacological based recommendations and interventions, such as, like, you know, lavender is great for sleep, stuff like that. So hopefully I was able to kind of clarify two pretty significant, frequently referred diagnoses. But again, rarely, even just thinking, I can't think of the last person that I tested, you know, doing at this point two neuropsych evals a day, 6 days a week. I can't think of the last time I tested somebody with just ADHD and just a processing speed disorder. There's usually depression, anxiety, sometimes bipolar, and that's why, again, I'm incredibly adamant about testing, because you need to rule out the mood disorder. And the earlier you can identify it, the earlier you can treat it, and you can minimize a proliferation and an exacerbation of any form of psychopathology. So until next time, hope everyone is well. Look forward to speak with you guys, reaching out. I'll talk to you next week. Take care, everyone. Thanks. Bye.